Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for making time available for our Chief of Board meeting for June. First item of business is a preamble that we've all heard too many times, but it is required, so please bear with me. In accordance with state law regarding public meetings held via electronic equipment, this meeting will be recorded and the recording will be posted on the authority's website. I'd like to start with a roll call of board members. My name is Peter Lisi. Obviously, I'm here. Mike Angelini?
Present.
Thank you. Steve Elbaum?
Yes, here.
Thank you, Steve. Susan Martin?
Present.
Thank you. Alan Matamana? Alan?
I'm here. Yeah.
You are here. Thank you, Alan. Bettina Brown Eyes.
Here.
Thank you. Seth Thompson.
Here.
Thank you. And a couple others who are not expecting, but I will call their name. Lawrence Davis. No. Kimberly Kennison. No. And Mark Vahalik. No. Okay.
Peter, I'm sorry. Peter, I'm sorry. I just want to remind you, I sent you an email earlier. I have a hard stop at 5:05.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Yeah, individual asked to state their name and title, if applicable, before speaking during the meeting. Votes will be taken by roll call unless the vote is unanimous. Excuse me. And in the event the meeting is interrupted due to technical difficulties, members and staff will receive a text or an email advising whether, number one, the meeting is adjourned or canceled, or two, the time the meeting will resume. So with that, I'd like to get right into our business at hand. First item of business is a review and hopefully approval of the minutes from our May 15th meeting. I always hope that people spend a few minutes with the minutes. Would someone like to move approval?
So Mike, so moved.
All right. I think Steve moved it. Mike Angelini seconded it. So it's been moved and seconded to accept the minutes as presented. Are there any edits or changes that need to be made? Any clarifications? Any changes? All right. Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the minutes as presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed?
You're abstaining.
And Alan is abstaining. Okay,
and
thank
Bettina's
you.
Bettina's abstaining.
Bettina and Alan are abstaining.
Yep.
All right, thank you. Motion still carries. Thank you. Okay, in the interest of accommodating some schedules, we are going to move agenda item 6, the committee reports, up, and we're going to do those now prior to the executive director's report. So I'm hoping that is okay with everyone, but we do need to accommodate some schedules. So beginning with the committee reports, first one was the Human Resources Committee. I'll let Mike Angelini take lead on that. Mike chairs that committee, and as with the Audit Finance Committee, which we'll also hear from, both of these committees met prior to the full board meeting. Mike?
Great, thanks, Peter. Before I take a motion to go into executive session, just for awareness this morning, the Human Resources Committee did meet to discuss the performance of CHIFA's executive director during the course of fiscal 2024 and to develop a recommendation for annual merit increase for FY 2025. We'd like to share with you some of that discussion by going into executive session.
I'll move that we move into executive session.
And sorry, Peter, if I could just interrupt. It's the purpose of the executive session is to discuss the performance evaluation of Jeanette. That just needs to be stated for the record.
Thanks.
Okay. Denise.
Thank you.
All right. With that as the purpose of going into executive session, I'll move it.
Alan, I'll second.
All right. Alan, second. All those in favor of moving into executive session, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Okay, you should have a notice on your screen of joining the breakout room. Okay. For the record, no votes were taken during executive session. And let's see. So with that, the Human Resources Committee met prior to this meeting and made a recommendation for a merit increase for the executive director. Would someone like to move acceptance of the Human Resources Committee recommendation?
This is Alan. So
thank you, Alan. Is there a second?
This is Mike Angelo. I'll second that.
Thank Mike, Michael. So it's been moved and seconded that the board approve the recommendation of the Human Resources Committee for a merit increase of our executive director. Is there any discussion, questions, comments? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay, also prior to this meeting, we had an audit finance committee meeting. Susan, would you like to provide a review of that?
I will, thank you, Peter. So yes, at our meeting, we had two agenda items today. The first one was to review the reports of Barry Dunn on their internal audit work done this period. And the second agenda item was to review the fiscal 2025 proposed operating and capital budgets. So as far as the Barry Dunn work, during this period, they had two areas that they focused on. The first one was human resources and payroll, and they also focused on information technology. Both of these areas had been previously reviewed because they're fairly high risk areas. And obviously, you know, payroll is one of the biggest expense of the organization. They also reviewed their methodology of their risk ratings for their recommendations, as well as their methodology of how they determine what the overall rating for risk will be. And after that, they got into the two areas. And as I said, the first one was the human resources and payroll. This had previously had an internal audit performed back in 2018. There were some previous recommendations, and we reviewed all of those. Most of those had been resolved. There was actually all but one, I should say, had been resolved. And the one that they said listed as partially resolved was related to a 941 reconciliation. Form 941 is a payroll tax IRS return. And their recommendation is really just to really improve or enhance the current reconciliation process. Currently, staff in finance and accounting area is doing a reconciliation to make sure that the numbers that are on those returns match the numbers that are in the general ledger. So in other words, what we withheld from employees' paychecks and calculated as the employer's portion of the payroll taxes, that the numbers are all consistent and accurate. Their recommendation is to also add to the reconciliation that they reconcile the numbers put on that return for wages paid. Being a tax accountant myself, you know, clearly if you have the wrong wage number, the taxes are going to calculate wrong as well. And if you can reconcile the tax payments and withholdings, you're probably good. But nonetheless, the recommendation there is to just add reconciling the numbers on the return for wages paid match the numbers that are in the financial system of CHIFA. So everything else from their previous audit had been resolved. They had a current recommendation from this audit, which was really to just update policies and procedures to reflect the actual processes. And this was really related around processing the payroll in the case of having unplanned absences. The current written documentation talks about there's a primary person and a backup person. But in the case that both of those individuals are not available to do this work, it is delegated to Jeanette, the executive director, although that is not in our documented policy. So because of the nature of that recommendation, it was ranked by them as a low risk, and therefore overall, looking at the human resource and payroll functions and the internal controls surrounding those, Barry Dunn assigned an overall result or risk rating of strong to that category. And I should have prefaced this all by saying they were very complimentary to the staff and the work that Chifa does in both of these areas. The second area that they re-reviewed this time was information technology. And there were several previous recommendations. And again, the majority of those have already been resolved. Six of those from the previous audit had been resolved. And again, they were very complimentary about how much work has been done over the recent period. There were really four others that are in progress. Two of those recommendations from the previous audit are scheduled for completion in July, and that was some failover testing, and it's just the cycle of when it is done. It's scheduled for this July. And then disaster recovery planning is also scheduled to be completed next month. Couple others that are in progress. So they really, you know, were very complimentary on everything that has been resolved since their last audit. On the new recommendations or current recommendations from this time period, they had five of them, and three they rated as medium risks. Two, and the other three were rated as low. The two medium, one was network change approvals. And again, there is a process in place for already approving any changes. They wanted to add another level or a second set of eyes just for tightening that up, just to ensure that somebody doesn't go in thinking they're making a change that's accurate and appropriate that could affect something that is not expected. So that was just one medium risk. The other one that was medium is system report reviews. Again, they really were just suggesting that we have a more formalized process with a schedule for reviewing all the reports to make sure the reports, the information on those reports are accurate, and a process for escalating anything that could be of concern. So again, really documentation. The third one was rated as low risk, and it's acceptable use policy. They're looking for Chifa to have every employee have a statement that they read and acknowledge that they understand what their responsibilities are as it relates to using Chifa's resources in the technology area. Again, that was rated as a low risk. The next one, also low risk, was implementing a PAM system, or a privilege access management system. And that has already been put in place since they drafted their recommendation. So that's really complete. And the final one, also really documentation related with a low risk rating, was formalizing password requirements. Again, documenting the length and the strength of passwords that must be used in the systems. So with those new recommendations and the resolution on the majority of the previous recommendations, they assigned an overall result rating, overall risk rating to the information technology category as adequate. Looking ahead in the next areas that they're going to take a look at between July and September of this year will be public bond offerings and bond documents and the legal review. And that's an area that they have not previously looked at. And the final one for October through November timeframe is really looking at the accounting functions. So they did that back in 2022, and they're going to take a look at that again later this year. So again, thank you to the staff, because they were very complimentary in all areas. And with that, does anybody have any questions on the internal audit report from Barry Dunn? Okay. Hearing none, our other agenda item, as I said, was to review the proposed budgets for operating and capital for fiscal 2025. And we went through extensive review. Charles walked us through a lot of schedules, and he is going to kind of give us a little bit of a summarized version, because at the end of the day, the Finance Committee is recommending to the full board acceptance of these two budgets. But I'll turn it over to Charles and Joanne to walk us through a high-level summary.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks, Kara, for putting that up. So we have a presentation I can show you to guide you through the conversation that we just had at the Audit Finance Committee. So if you could go to slide 55, thank you very much. So this is a high level view of the primary numbers for the fiscal 25 budget with operating revenues over 8 million. First time we've seen revenues cross the $8 million mark. Operating expenses, 4.658, level with prior year budget for the most part. Excess revenues at 3.5, then reduced by the non-operating expenses of 1.1 for our change in net position, 2.4 million for the year. So just to highlight a couple of significant things here on this page, the change in net position of 2.4 is about $1.3 million higher than what we're expecting for fiscal 24 projected actuals. And the primary drivers of that rise are on the non-operating revenue line. That's normally a reduction of $2 million or so. But this year, it's only $1.1 million because of the timing of one of our grant cycles. The enterprise capital grant will be paid out in fiscal 26. So a little bit less on the grant revenue going out this year. And then on the top line, the operating revenues of 8.1, that's almost 400,000 higher than we're projecting for fiscal 24 on some new bond issues in fiscal 25. We can talk about, we can flip to the next slide, Kara. We'll talk about that revenue right now. So you can see the 8.19 on the bottom of the page that ties back to the number that I just showed you. The largest component of that is the second bullet point there, the administrative fee revenue of 7.9. And that's the revenue on our outstanding bond issues, which by the end of fiscal 25, we expect to be in the 9 billion outstanding range. During the course of fiscal 25, as you can see on the first slide, there's gonna be 10 new bond issues that are gonna generate new money, right? So not refinancing, but new money of 553 million. The anticipated revenue on that is the additional 400 that we talked about on the in the number on the first page. So 7.5 is the level that we had in fiscal 24. We expect the existing portfolio to continue to generate around 7.5, and then these new bond issues will layer an additional amount on top of that. All right, if we could move to the next slide, which is operating expenses. So the first bullet point there, salary and benefit expense. As you all know, that was reviewed by the HR and Audit Finance Committees in April, and they approved that portion of the budget for fiscal 25. Salaries and benefits accounts for 70% of our operating expense, and it is largely flat to the budget, slightly down from the budget in fiscal 24. When you look at salary and benefits together, it's the salary portion that's relatively flat. Benefits, unfortunately, as we all know, medical coverage is going up, anticipated 12%. So we do have a little bit of an increase relative to projected actuals driven by the benefits number, approximately $52,000 additional benefits expense. Looking at the general administrative and contracted services, you can see general and administrative an increase of about 9,000 over the budget. Contracted services a decrease of about 14,000, so they sort of net out. Really, for these two areas, we are flat to the fiscal 2024 budget. The budget number for fiscal 25 is up relative to projected actuals, based on some items that we didn't spend. We underspent in the projected actuals for fiscal 24, but we're carrying that budget forward to fiscal 25. A few distractions like the move in fiscal 24 would have kept us away from things like conferences that we need to resume in the coming fiscal year. There are some new items that we're looking at in these two categories. I won't go into detail on those, but as I indicated, these two areas are relatively flat, which means the new items are coming in and replacing some expenses that are coming out, primarily related to our move during the fiscal 24 year. Just as sort of an aside, thinking about the revenue number at 8 million, that represents almost a 6% increase over fiscal 24, whereas our expense number is approximately 4% increase, 4.8% increase over fiscal 24. So revenues outpacing operating expenses in terms of percentage is always a good story to share. All right, Carrie, you can move on to the non-operating income. Thank you. We already talked about grants, which is the third bullet point here. So the enterprise capital grants that are on an 18-month cycle, takes a little bit of time to finalize the recipients on the enterprise capital grant. It is a bit more involved process than our other grant cycles, and that explains the 18 months. The two other grant cycles, the client and non-client, will be on schedule for next year on their regular delivery times, and that should be approximately $2 million in grants. The top line talks about investment income. We have a $900,000 expectation for next year based on a 5.3% interest rate, which is aligned with the state's short-term investment fund rates. And a slight increase in our overall investment balances, which are just north of 17 million. All of those numbers, you know, the ins and outs taken into account, we should be able to maintain a fairly significant investment balance and a good return on those numbers. Okay, so that's the non-operating of 1.1, which is the net of the grants and the investment income. So all in all, the bottom line that I showed you on the first page was a $2.4 million add to net assets. It's good to have a number of that size as we start our new strategic plan cycle. So as you know, approving the strategic plan, it is a three-year cycle, and it has lots of initiatives that we will be implementing. Having those funds on hand with that bottom line allows us to drive a lot of those initiatives, whether it be additions to the revolving loan fund, employing the CDC subsidiary to start up some activity, or even things like marketing and capital projects, which is the next thing I'm going to take a look at here on page 63. So capital always requires investment to stay current and to stay useful. We have a list here of items that we'll be deploying as part of our capital expense budget for fiscal 25. Totals about $155,000, which is just slightly below what the capital budget was for fiscal 24. A couple of categories here. You'll see some things for the office, furnishing, key card access for the IT room and AV equipment. These were things that we had planned to do post-move, so we're right on target there. And then there are some things that are also related to software, such as the build-out of our bond replacement system. We have a legacy system that we've been working with AutoScene to replace that, so finishing that build-out. Then as well as some work on the backend infrastructure for the Chiefa.com website that we've reached out to some vendors for estimates on that. Finally, the multi-view emphasis. These are two elements of accounting software where we're wrapping up implementation on those in the coming year and using some of the support hours that we have in addition to this 10,000 amount. And then of course, there's a contingency that we put in place. Anybody who owns a home knows contractors Sometimes there's always a little bit of extra, so we build in a little bit of a contingency there for our capital. Any questions?
Just a question about, this is Alan, about the fiscal 25 new bond issuances. I think I heard you say 10 new in the budget for about 400K in underlying revenue. I was curious what the numbers were for fiscal year 24 for that, and then how much visibility do we have against those 10 new bond issuances sitting here today?
Yeah, so let me speak a little bit about the 10 new issues today. So, like I said, it's about $553 million in new money. And already half of those are going to take place in July. So that's about $400 million in new money issues in the first month of the year. So already 80% of the issue dollars have a name, right? And then the rest is an estimate in line with what we've seen in the past. So so that's an important thing to know about the 10 issues is the certainty of it, right? I mean, these are already in works. As for this year, I don't have that immediately in front of me. I do know to tell you that the revenue that we have for projected actuals in 24 is flat to 23. So to me, without knowing the exact number, we're replacing the runoff.
Great, thank you. That was where I was going, just you know, where we are with trend lines and volume relative to last year.
Yeah, and if we didn't have these 10 ads, we would have a similar number to what we experienced in prior years.
Thank Does you, anybody sir. Have any other questions or comments? Okay, well, hearing none, Peter, as I said earlier, the committee is recommending to the full board approval of the budgets as just reported here.
Yep, thank you, Susan. Again, just to repeat, when the HR or the Audit Finance Committee met prior to this meeting, there was a very thorough and complete review of the budget that Charles just summarized. The Audit Finance Committee unanimously endorsed it, and it's now coming to the full board for action. So you've heard the presentation by Charles. Susan opened it up to any questions. Would someone like to make a motion to adopt the budget as presented?
I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Alan. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All right, Steve seconded it. So it's been made, the motion has been made and seconded to adopt the budget as presented and as approved by the Audit Finance Committee. Are there any further questions for Charles, for Susan, or for any board member that was at the committee meeting? Any questions or comments? Anything at all? All right, hearing none, the motion has been made and seconded to approve the or to adopt the budget as presented. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Is there anyone opposed? Aye. Are there any abstentions? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Charles. Okay, with our committee reports completed, now we can go back up to the top of the agenda. We've got a couple of reports. Jeanette, would you like to start with the authority update?
Sure. So my authority update is very brief today, and it's just to remind everyone that we have a webinar on artificial intelligence that we're hosting next Tuesday, June 25th at 1 o'clock, and it's on AI and finance and the municipal bond market. So you all should receive the invite, and hopefully you are available to attend. I think it'll be very interesting. So that is my update for this meeting.
Okay, thank you, Jeanette. Mike Morris, client updates?
Sure, I'll be
Brief as well. We had a couple of pricings, one for remarketing for Yale University for the 2015 aid bonds. Earlier this month, that's about $254 million. And we also priced the Yale New Haven Health transaction last week, and we'll hear a report from Josh from Acacia. And following last month's approval of the maximum loan amount for the revolving loan fund has garnered much interest. I think Charles alluded to this in his audit finance committee. We have application for Canterbury School for $200,000 to purchase two new buses. New Canaan YMCA is also a client for $500,000 to partially fund a installation of a microgrid. We have two other non-clients that are seeking applications, one for Walter YMCA and one for the UConn Foundation. And just at 2 o'clock, the dam received another application for a childcare facility for $500,000. So I think it's been well received with the increase in the maximum loan amounts. And that's about it.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? All right. And Bob, market update?
Unfortunately, I can't be brief, but the Maryland new issuance continues to be very favorable. Heavy June coupon and redemption payments, as well as the anticipation for a strong July wave of payments, coupled with cheapening of municipal ratios, municipal bond inflows, renewed optimism surrounding inflation expectations have all been the primary catalysts for the strong demand. Last week, the Consumer Price Index, the Producer Price Index, the Michigan Consumer Sentiment, as well as initial jobless claims data all surprised to the downside. That basically set the stage for the FOMC to deliver guidance, indicating that there could be the potential for at least one rate cut for 2024, and that if conditions persist, that there will be additional cuts in 2025. At the beginning of the week, the futures market priced in approximately a 55% probability that there would be a rate cut in September. After all the news was digested by the markets, the futures market has moved to a 77% probability that a rate cut could occur in September. The amount of new issuance is likely to be reduced over the next several weeks, just given the fact that we have the Juneteenth holiday tomorrow. We also have the July 4th holiday coming up. On the transactions page, we have the Yale University remarketing, which was a very successful transaction. Happened to just come at the most opportune time in the markets where ratios had just gotten to the point of getting decent investor attention. We had over $260 million of bonds that were offered and wound up getting over $1.5 billion in orders. So that allowed the underwriters to price the transaction from what we went out initially at plus 10 to MMD, a spread to minus 3. So a very, very strong result for the university. Some of the names in the order book included Vanguard, as well as Susquehanna. They each had orders for more than $200 million each. Then we had Goldman Sachs, as well as McKay Shields and Old Orchard Capital Management with orders over $100 million. And that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Any questions? All right. Okay. Now we're going to have a sales report on the Yale New Haven health issue. Josh?
Afternoon, everybody. Good to see you all again. And I'm going to give a brief post-sale report on the Yale New Haven health issue, which we sold back on June 11th. The authority sold approximately $315 million in revenue bonds, consisting of approximately $156.7 in Series A serial bonds and $158 million in Series B put bonds. These transactions are also being sold in conjunction with a variable rate issue of about $370 million, which is going to price right before closing in early July. Proceeds from the sale of the Series A bonds were used to refund outstanding 2013 Series N and 14 Series A and E for debt service savings, which were structured proportionally over the life of the existing outstanding bonds. And the put bond was used to refinance an existing put bond and had a similar structure with a term in 2049 with sinkers beginning in 2037. Both series are secured by a loan agreement between the authority and the corporation, and the obligation to make payments can constitute an absolute general obligation of the corporation, as we're accustomed to. And the bonds, based on that security, the bonds are rated A+ by Fitch and AA- by S&P. Turning to the next slide, I'll give a brief recap on the pricing, which will sound a little similar to Bob's recap in terms of the success of the transaction. As noted, we went out on June 11th, and as is our custom, the working group consisting of Chifa, the corporation, the underwriter, and financial advisor had a number of calls leading up to pricing, market update calls, as well as preliminary price views calls to discuss the market and propose levels with the goal of getting a pre-marketing wire out to gauge interest in the from investors. The market continued to experience pretty good volatility, as we've seen over the last year, really 18 months or so, based on significant heavy supply, the release of economic data, and then the tempered expectations of rate cuts. Certainly, we now know that we're expecting at least probably one this year, but the expectation earlier in the year were multiple. So I think that the change in sentiment put a little bit of pressure on the market and created some volatility. But just to highlight a couple of things about volume, May was, $40 billion in volume. That was the highest number since 2016 for a month. The first week in June, $15 billion in volume. That was the highest weekly volume in 7 years. And that was followed shortly thereafter on June 7th by the non-farm payroll report, which is better than expected, which again created additional volatility in the market. To illustrate that volatility, we saw rates run up 20 to 40 basis points in the last 10 days of May, followed by a rapid decline of about 20 basis points in the first week of June. And then we had the non-farm payroll report, which caused a little bit of a jump again up by 3 basis points. Fortunately, things were steady heading into pricing. On the 10th and the 11th, we had no change in MMD, so the tone was pretty good. The other thing that Bob mentioned was because of the significant redemptions in June, the market was really able to absorb all this additional volume because of all the money coming in for reinvestment from the coupon payments and redemptions. So that helped kind of spur demand for the transaction, as well as an overall lack of paper in Connecticut, which is really driving investors to really buy up any Connecticut deals that are coming, whether it's healthcare, higher education, general obligation, you name it. So overall, investor feedback was pretty good. Not a lot of reads, which is not unusual in this market, but we had enough to go out relatively aggressive at 25 to 50 across the curve over MMD. And then based on continued positive read, we held those spreads steady going into the order period. So Kara, if you could switch to the next slide, I'll give a quick recap of the results. And as you can see from the price and regression and order summary, the sale was very, very well received. We had a strong order, strong orders across all maturities, total subscription of 6.4 times. 48 different investors put in orders over $2 billion. And then individual maturities range from almost 3 times to about 12 times oversubscribed on the highest end. And then the put bond, that single maturity term bond, had oversubscription of about 7 times. Of particular note, we had 7 investors with orders of more than 100 million. Interestingly, Vanguard, like they were on the Yale transaction that Bob mentioned, they came in at close to 300 million on this transaction. Pretty much orders across the board. Fidelity, BlackRock, Parametric, and Mackay Shields were other buyers that came in with really significant orders to help anchor the deal. And then due to this strong level of subscription, we were able to lower yields anywhere from 3 to 11 basis points across the curve, pretty much consistent with the level of oversubscription. A few we were able to move more than the subscription levels. A couple we had to kind of hold a little bit shorter than that, just in light of the integrity of the curve. But overall, I think the corporation and the authority were very happy with the sale, and it was a great result in spite of the volatility. So happy to answer any questions.
And great summary. Great sale. Congratulations. Okay. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you.
Any questions? Anyone? Okay. Thank you, Josh.
Great.
Okay, Bob, we've got three memos to review.
Yep.
Over to you.
Okay, so the first one is going to be for Fairview. Or actually Oddfellows, but staff is seeking approval today for up to $23 million for Oddfellows Healthcare. Oddfellows is doing business as Fairview, and they intend to issue both tax-exempt as well as taxable bonds via direct purchase to Chelsea Groton Bank. Chelsea Groton Bank currently holds a taxable bank loan that was used to redeem the 2017 CHIFA issued Series A bonds, which was a direct purchase with M&T Bank. I think it's important that the board be aware that the primary purpose of this financing, in conjunction with funding the Phase 3 project that we have listed in the memo, is to help Fairview in its process to essentially change its business model from what could be considered an unsustainable long-term care business that is suffering from escalating operating costs, an increasing gap between reimbursement rates and the costs of care, labor shortages, staffing challenges, to changing to a a continuing care CCRC. So while the financials presented herein may not look as favorable, I will say that some of the information that has been sent to us with forecasted financials post the completion of the project offer a much different picture. The current nursing facility will be replaced with 174 independent living apartments, 40 assisted living units, 24 memory support suites, all with their prospective entrance fees, as well as monthly service fees where applicable. Entrance fees will range anywhere between $429,000 to $749,000 for independent living, with rents ranging from about $4,000 to almost $6,700 a month. The assisted living and memory support will have monthly service fees of approximately $8,000 to $10,000 a month. Fairview's unit mix will go from 63% skilled nursing and 38% independent living to 79% independent living, 13% assisted living, and 8% memory support. This will correspond with a revenue mix change from 88% healthcare related and 12% independent living to 66% independent living and only 34% healthcare related. By 2032, it's expected that the project will achieve a 39% operating margin and will generate approximately $3.25 million of annual net cash flow, including entrance fees. It's also worth mentioning that Fairview is working with a private commercial real estate finance and investment company called Greystone for this project. In addition, it's also important to recognize the importance of their local banking relationship that is also an integral part of this proposed financing. There are plans for some additional short-term financing either later in 2024 or early 2025 prior to Fairview seeking permanent financing within the next 3 years. The project budget is approximately $230 million, of which $208 million is expected to be financed with $137 million of tax-exempt debt, $71 million in temporary debt, and $22 million of initial entrance fees. Planned construction is expected to start in 2026. The nursing consensus will start to reduce in October 26, and cease operations in February 2029. First occupancy is expected in the independent living area in February of 2028. And then in February 2029, the assisted living and memory support will have their first occupancy. Full occupancy for all is expected by May 2032. Given the repositioning strategy that this proposed financing is going to provide Fairview, it's going to enable them to become more of a financially viable institution with positive net cash flow that'll cover debt service. In addition, I think that they have a strong Allegic partners with Greystone and Chelsea Groton. Staff would like to seek the board's approval today of this direct purchase. And that's it. I can be open to questions.
Any questions for Bob? Anything? Bob, I just have one quick one. It's not necessarily specific to this, but on the financial covenants, it says minimum debt service coverage ratio of 1.2 times annually. Could you just remind me, is 1.2 a pretty high threshold or is it a pretty low bar? I mean,
give me
10 seconds on how I should think about 1.2 debt service coverage ratio.
You know, everything I think is going to be really sector specific. You know, I think that, within some of the other sectors that we are involved in, such as higher education, and it's also ratings dependent as well, and underwriting standards. So everything can, vary from issuer to issuer, whether it's in the same sector or a different sector. But, in this case, I'd say that 1.2 times for this specific issuer is a fairly high hurdle.
Okay.
And based on the conversations that we've had with the borrower in this specific case, they feel comfortable with this financial covenant and being able to meet it. They're or have built into their budget that they're going to be able to achieve that, as well as the fact that, all the modeling that they've put into this project and working with Greystone, et cetera, all their forecasts indicate that the project will be able to generate sufficient debt service coverage for the transaction going forward. If we would like to get a comparison of other CCRCs, we could certainly, I think get that information.
No, I'm good. You've told me that's good.
Okay.
All right. No, that's fine. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. Are there further questions or comments for Bob? All right. Well, hearing none, presentations have made. Would someone like to make a motion to accept staff's recommendation on the Oddfellows Healthcare final memo? It is a private placement through Chelsea Groton Bank. The primary due diligence will reside with Chelsea Groton. But would someone like to make a motion to accept staff's recommendation?
Sure, I'll make a motion. It's Steve Elbaum.
Thank you, Steve. Is there a second?
Alan, I'll second.
Thank you, Alan. Motion been made and seconded to accept staff's recommendation on Oddfellows. Is there any further discussion or questions? All right. Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Motion carries unanimously. All right, Bob, we have two more. One is just a rate adjustment, I think. Goodwin?
Peter, this is Mike. I was going to handle that.
Okay.
So at last month's meeting, when we approved the bond issue for the Goodwin University Series A, one of the parameters in the bond authorizing resolution had an interest rate not to exceed 6%. But given the university's rating of BBB-, there's a taxable piece that's part of the transaction. And with the rising rate environment, interest rate environment, the underwriter wants us to amend that because they think it might be above the 6%. And just to be safe, they want to increase it from 6% to 6.5%.
So it's just changing the language in the agreement to allow a ceiling of 6.5%, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the bond resolution. So and there's in the bond resolution.
Okay. All right. Any questions for Michael?
Michael, what was the anticipated bond rating?
They were hoping for a BBB, and then it came in at BBB-.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, would someone like to move acceptance of staff's recommendation on the amendment to the authorizing bond resolution for Goodwin? Is there a motion?
Is Alan so moved?
Thank you, Alan. Is there a second?
Steve, I'll second it.
Thank you, Steve. It's been made and seconded to accept staff's recommendation on Goodwin University, the amended and restated authorizing bond resolution, increasing the interest rate ceiling from 6 to 6.5. Any further questions, comments, discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you all, motion carries. Thank you, Michael. All right, Bob, we're back to you for a private placement on Westminster.
Yes. Okay. So for Westminster, staff would like to request the board's approval for up to $20 million for the Westminster School. Westminster intends to sell these bonds as a direct purchase to JP Morgan Chase Bank. This is a very straightforward transaction in that the school is exercising its option to convert its currently outstanding Series L3 bonds, which are taxable, to a tax-exempt basis. This was provided for in the original transaction back in 2021 via a forward purchase contract. As referenced in the memo back in 2021, when the Series L bonds in their entirety were issued, the overall economics of the financing did not provide for any net present value savings, even though the conversion was factored into the economics. School's intent at the time was basically to restructure its overall debt profile to make it more advantageous for them. And it also allowed them to eliminate their variable rate debt as well as their interest rate swaps. So given the fact that there's no real material changes to the school's overall financing, and this is just a conversion that'll essentially close the loop on the original transaction, staff would like to ask for the board's approval for this transaction this afternoon.
Thank you, Bob. Hearing Bob's review on Westminster, would someone like to move acceptance of staff's recommendation on Westminster? I'm happy to move it. Is there a second?
This is Mike. I'll second.
Thank you, Mike. All right, it's been moved. The motion's been made and seconded to accept staff's recommendation on the Westminster School private placement. Are there further questions for Bob? Questions or comments? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of accepting staff's recommendation on Westminster, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Hearing none, motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you so much.
All right. Okay, Mike, you've got some business to bring before us for Chief of CDC.
Correct. Today, we're looking for a resolution to be passed for the appointment of Chief of Community Development Corporation Board of Directors. As you know, all the members of Chief of Board are also members of the Chief of CDC. Today, we're looking for approval to Serena Thompson to be appointed as a director of the CDC Board until the next annual meeting. or until her successor is appointed. I don't know if you can see on the screen there. Number two has to be amended, where it says the member designee is hereby directed to attend. It should read the special member meeting of the corporation to adopt the resolution.
Not annual member meeting, but special member meeting?
Special meeting, yes. So we're looking for approval of the resolution with that modification to the resolution.
Okay, fine. Thank you, Mike. Are there any questions? Comments? Would someone like to move acceptance of the resolution? I'm happy to move it. Is there a second?
It's Alan, I'll second.
Thank you, Alan. It's been made and seconded to accept staff's recommendation for the Chief of CDC resolution. Portman. Yes, the resolution. Are there any questions for Mike? Comments? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? Are there any abstentions? Motion carries. The resolution is adopted. Thank you, Mike. Okay. Is there any other business to be brought forth to the for the board? Anything for the good of the cause? There is a notice, I believe, in your meeting packet about the webinar next week. It was mentioned previously. If your schedule allows, it'd be great to see some board members there. But is there any other business anyone would like to bring forward? Anything? Well, thank you all for your time. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Is Alan so moved?
It's moved and seconded to adjourn. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.